From Elmhurst Public Library, this is Storytime for Grown-Ups. Stories have the power to inspire and change us. Being read to stimulates our brains, expands our imaginations, and it's just plain fun. I am Margie Kohlbacher. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 4. Today, we're entering into the holiday mood with several very different stories. Our first piece is Christmas and Me by Neil Gaiman. Neil Gaiman is a British author who writes everything from award-winning novels to comic books. He's even played himself on TV on The Simpsons and The Big Bang Theory. He's amazingly versatile and popular with all ages. Today's piece gives us a glimpse into his childhood holiday experience. Sit back, listen, and enjoy.
Christmas and Me by Neil Gaiman. I do not recall lobbying for anything as a boy as hard as I lobbied with my sisters for a Christmas tree. My parents objected. "We're Jewish," they said. "We don't do Christmas. We do Hanukkah instead." This did nothing to stop the lobbying. Anyway, Hanukkah was no substitute for Christmas. My parents, unlike my grandparents, didn't always remember to keep Hanukkah, and even when my mother remembered the festival, we children could see that a menorah and candles were not a Christmas tree. My parents kept kosher, went to shul on high holy days, but that was the extent of things in our house. My grandparents were properly observant Jews. My parents were not particularly observant Jews, while we children were, quite simply, bad Jews. We knew we were bad Jews because we wanted a Christmas tree. We were surrounded by Christmas, after all. When I was 8, I was offered the choice of playing a shepherd or wise man in my school nativity play. I was a precocious child, and I had read widely, so I argued with the primary school teacher, pointing out that you could choose either to have wise men or shepherds, but not both, as the Gospels of Luke and Matthew contained accounts of very different nativities. Wisely, she declined to argue theology with an 8-year-old and instead pointed out to me that as first shepherd, I would also be the narrator and would read from a scroll, and fearful of losing what was to turn out to be a fairly good part with no actual lines to learn, I stilled my tongue. Christmas presents. That was a battle we had already won, my sisters and me. It didn't matter that my mother wrote Happy Hanukkah in my Doctor Who annual with William Hartnell or Patrick Troughton on the cover. The book still arrived on Christmas Day in a pillowcase filled with gifts. What the present was called was mere semantics. As long as we got the swag, we did not care what was written on it. We were not jealous of friends who got Christmas presents. We were jealous of the friends with Christmas trees. Having a Christmas tree was what Christmas was all about. It had nothing to do with mangers and shepherds, and more properly, as I would no doubt have told you at length back then, wise men. Not as far as we were concerned. It was trees all the way, properly decorated ones, with tinsel and glass balls and a star at the top. We lobbied, and we lobbied hard, and we would not give up. My parents would not countenance it. They had not had Christmas trees when they were children. Instead, they had parents who disapproved of Christmas trees. You couldn't, my mother told us, be Jewish and have a Christmas tree. I was a precocious child, and I had read widely, and I struck, "But it's not Christian," I said. "I'll think you find it is, dear," said my mother. "That's why they call them Christmas trees, after all." "They are, actually," I told her proudly and precociously, "a pagan relic, the trees. The thing of people bringing trees into houses at the winter solstice and decorating them has nothing at all to do with Christianity. It's from pagan times." I'm not sure why it was better to be a pagan relic, but I hoped it was, and it seemed to shake my mother's certainty. Like my teacher, she knew better than to argue theology with an 8-year-old. Whether it was, as I thought at the time, my precocious argument, or more probably in retrospect, my sister's huge, pleading eyes and trembling lower lips, I do not know. But my father went to the local market and picked out a Christmas tree for us and brought it home. We decorated it and were content. Having won the Christmas tree battle, we had somehow won the Christmas war. My father even dressed up that Christmas Eve as Father Christmas with an enormous cotton wool beard to place our presents by our beds. We pretended to be as asleep as we could. What was that about? I asked my sister after he had gone. It was just Dad, she whispered. Are you sure? He was wearing Dad's dressing gown, she said sensibly. Of course it was him. It seemed to be one of the best things about having a good Jewish Christmas. We were never obliged to believe in Father Christmas, and the experiment was never repeated. But the Christmas trees were there to stay. A Christmas tree was bought normally on the last Sunday before Christmas for the rest of my childhood. Our more orthodox cousins, profoundly treeless, were both scandalized and impressed by this. But we were happy. We had a nice Jewish Christmas. We were content.
Our second piece is by Mark Twain. What to say about the famous American author, aka Samuel Clemens? We've all read his books, or at least heard about them in school, such as The Adventures of Tom Sawyer and Adventures of Huckleberry Finn. Twain married Olivia Langdon in 1870, after she initially turned him down. They had four children, and in 1875, Mark Twain wrote a letter to his daughter Susie, who was 3 years old at the time. Sit back, listen, and enjoy.
Mark Twain's letter from Santa Claus. Palace of St. Nicholas in the Moon, Christmas morning. My dear Susie Clemens, I have received and read all the letters which you and your little sister have written me by the hand of your mother and your nurses. I have also read those which you little people have written me with your own hands. For although you did not use any characters that are in grown people's alphabet, you used the characters that all children in all lands on earth and in the twinkling stars use. And as all my subjects in the moon are children and use no character but that, you will easily understand that I can read your and your baby sister's jagged and fantastic marks without any trouble at all. But I had trouble with those letters which you dictated through your mother and the nurses, for I am a foreigner and I cannot read English writing well. You will find that I make no mistakes about the things which you and the baby ordered in your own letters. I went down your chimney at midnight when you were asleep and delivered them all myself, and kissed both of you too, because you are good children, well-trained, nice-mannered, and about the most obedient little people I ever saw. But in the letter which you dictated, there were some words which I could not make out for certain, and one or two small orders which I could not fill because we ran out of stock. Our last lot of kitchen furniture for dolls has just gone to a very poor little child in the North Star, away up in the cold country above the Big Dipper. Your mama can show you that star, and you will say, Little Snowflake, for that is the child's name, I'm glad you got that furniture, for you need it more than I. That is, you must write that with your own hand, and Snowflake will write you an answer. If you only spoke it, she wouldn't hear you. Make your letter light and thin, for the distance is great and the postage very heavy. There was a word or two in your mama's letter which I couldn't be certain of. I took it to be a trunk full of doll's clothes. Is that it? I will call at your kitchen door at about 9 o'clock this morning to inquire. But I must not see anybody. and I must not speak to anybody but you. When the kitchen doorbell rings, George must be blindfolded and sent to open the door. Then he must go back to the dining room or the china closet and take the cook with him. You must tell George he must walk on tiptoe and not speak. Otherwise, he will die someday. Then you must go up to the nursery and stand on a chair or the nurse's bed and put your ear to the speaking tube that leads down to the kitchen. And when I whistle through it, you must speak in the tube and say, "Welcome, Santa Claus." Then I will ask whether it was a trunk you ordered or not. If you say it was, I shall ask you what color you want the trunk to be. Your mama will help you to name a nice color, and then you must tell me every single thing in detail which you want the trunk to contain. Then, when I say goodbye and a Merry Christmas to my little Susie Clemens, you must say, "Goodbye, good old Santa Claus. I thank you very much, and please tell that little snowflake I will look at her star tonight, and she must look down here. I will be right in the West Bay window. And every fine night, I will look at her star and say, I know somebody up there and like her too." Then you must go down into the library and make George close all the doors that open into the main hall. And everybody must keep still for a little while. I will go to the moon and get those things, and in a few minutes I will come down the chimney that belongs to the fireplace that is in the hall, if it is a trunk you want, because I couldn't get such a thing as a trunk down the nursery chimney, you know. People may talk if they want until they hear my footsteps in the hall. Then you tell them to keep quiet a little while till I go back up the chimney. Maybe you will not hear my footsteps at all. So you may go now and then and peep through the dining room doors, and by we'll see that thing which you want right under the piano in the drawing room, for I shall put it there. If I should leave any snow in the hall, you must tell George to sweep it into the fireplace, for I haven't time to do such things. George must not use a broom, but a rag, else he will die someday. You must watch George and not let him run into danger. If my boot should leave a stain on the marble, George must not wholly stone it away. Leave it there, always in memory of my visit. And whenever you look at it or show it to anybody, you must let it remind you to be a good little girl. Whenever you are naughty, and somebody points to that mark, which is your good old Santa Claus's boot made on the marble, what will you say, little sweetheart? Goodbye, for a few minutes, till I come down to the world and ring the kitchen doorbell. Your loving Santa Claus, whom people sometimes call the Man in the Moon.
Thank you for listening today. Be sure to join us for our next episode of Mind Expanding Tales.
Storytime for Grownups is recorded at Elmhurst Public Library's Creative Studio Lab. Directed and edited by Jeremy Slayton. Produced and hosted by Margie Kohlbacher. Stories narrated by Duard Mosley. Works read in this podcast may be protected under copyright law. These podcasts are reserved for the education of library patrons only. Elmhurst Public Library receives no commercial gain from these recordings. No unauthorized further dissemination of these works is permitted.